It's funny how money changes situations. Miscommunication leads to complications.
Bienvenidos a Radio Prensa Pobre. Radio para el pueblo, para la lucha del pueblo. Welcome to Poor News Network Radio. Radio for the people, by the people in struggle. Almuteado con voces de migrantes en resistencia. In studio con mi carnala, Poverty and Mama Scala, Tiny. Today's show is dedicated to our brothers and sisters in the Philippines and all the island nations in the eye of this climate change storm. On this segment, we will hear from Filipina Poverty Mama Scala perspective on the Filipina devastations. We will also be hearing part of our research investigation led by us, residents, the impacted people, not the pilot tricksters, on the privatization of public housing across the nations. We will focus on the destruction of Section 8.
It don't matter where the Compton or Hunters Point, Richmond or Echo Park. Cops can't tell your ass apart, so they gon' tear your ass apart. Regardless of however much money you can clock, Jay-Z and Barack didn't change my block. It don't change how we seen on TV's mainstream. God forbid you rock a goofy, you must be on that extreme side of things. That Islamic garment might get you a brand. Savage killer in a jungle versus murder in a sand.
As poor peoples, indigenous peoples in resistance across the globe, we pray, fight, march, and write to make sure we are actually heard, understood, and respected. Sadly, most of the time, just like before tragedies happen, the voices of us poor folks, our scholarship, our insider on-the-ground knowledge is never heard. In corporate media and a lot of independent media, you will hear a momentary cry or a wail or an aerial view of devastation, and maybe, if you are lucky, a voice asking for help or describing the moment. But when do you hear our voices spoken by us about us? This is why we are blessed to have one of our sister mama poverty scholars at Poor Magazine, Nita B, a mestiza Filipina, speaking her truth about her peoples who were hit hard in this terrible typhoon in the Philippines. Nita, can you drop some knowledge on listeners from your perspective of folks in the lands of which your families of origin came from, and what your perspective is on that?
My family, we're Wadai people, which is hails from the area that was hit hard by the typhoon Hian. The interesting thing is that it was Mindanao and the Eastern Visayans that were hit. And historically, both these areas are highly militant, highly organized. With the folks in Mindanao who got hit, they've been in the longest jihad in human history. They've been fighting against foreign imperialism for almost 500 years now. First the Spanish, then the U.S., then the Japanese, then the U.S. again. They're super organized, super militant, and they haven't basically been properly colonized by the colonial forces. They're fighting to basically have a sovereign Muslim nation to actually secede from the Philippines which wasn't even named by Filipinos. Mm. It was named by the Spanish. There is no letter F in any of the 500 languages of the current Philippine islands. For those who don't know, the Philippines has been a colony or a neo-colony of the United States since 1898. We kicked the Spanish out, and then the U.S. came and bombed us and took over the Philippines. In the 1940s was the first time we actually had Filipino, quote-unquote, presidents that actually looked like Filipinos. Before that, it was always U.S. presidents coming in to be presidents of the Filipino people. And how this kind of plays out in what just happened was, this is the 26th typhoon to hit the Philippines this year. Typhoons are very common in the Philippines. It's a tropical island. It has typhoons all the time. However, the Philippine government does not have an emergency relief effort, period. No kind of plan, nothing. That's not what their interest is. It's now been, since last Wednesday, it's been a week since the typhoon has hit. The Philippine government has yet to really deal with helping getting aid to the areas. Who's doing the aid giving and getting the aid to the people is actually folks on the ground, grassroots organizations, regular people, moms and dads and families.
Can you just tell listeners where they should go if they do want or can kick down some bloodstained American dollars and or any other help?
The most reliable place to send your donations to is the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. NAFCON. Basically, it's a coalition of grassroots organizations that works directly with grassroots organizations working every day in the Philippines. 100% of your money will go there. They will get the stuff. These are the folks who are actually getting the aid out. It's not the government, and it's not Red Cross. It's these grassroots organizations. On Sunday, there's also a National Day of Action in San Francisco. I'm going to be having something. You can also check the NAFCON website for more information about that.
Thank you, babe. Talk to you soon.
Public housing, you know I love you. Get that money until we die. In the projects where we be wildin', representing all my people in the sky.
On the last PNN segment, we reported on the newest technology to hit poor folks living in what used to be called public housing. A federal HUD-sponsored program called RAD, Rental Assistance Demonstration, will be in final nail in the coffin to sell our public housing buildings to private investors, leaving us tenants at the mercy of private nonprofit housing developers. On today's show, we will hear poverty scholars from San Francisco on their experience with the dismantling of Section 8 and privatization.
A mama scholar, fellow welfare queen at Small W Capital Q, Junebug, dropping it down, is on the line with us. June, I know that you are currently receiving Section 8 and, of course, live in one of the buildings run by these private developers, as we affectionately call it. But you're also a revolutionary advocate, like all of us Mama Scholars and Poverty Scholars at Poor magazine. So can you tell listeners what the recent thing you've been observing is going on with our fellow scholars?
I currently have been a Section 8 voucher holder for about 10 years in the city, and without it, even though I'm native to this city, I wouldn't be able to afford to live in this high-cost city without a Section 8 voucher. However, once you get the voucher, the battle is not over with, because a lot of corporate and even nonprofit institutes that are buying up property and having a certain percentage of their units be below market rate, they still put these income guidelines that you have to fit into in order to qualify to move in, so creating obstacles for people who have Section 8 vouchers to even access housing, even though they got the voucher. Corporations, they only actually have a certain percentage in their building be below market rate. So, for instance, in the building I live in San Francisco, only 30% of the units are BMR, and the 70% is market rate. Now, that's just insane. That's, once again, creating another block for people to access housing, even if they have Section 8. I think that it's a way for them to particularly block out people who get SSI and receive welfare. So exactly. If somebody who works, for instance, and has a Section 8 voucher, they're more likely to accept that tenant based on somebody who's on fixed income in a welfare program or SSI. They're more likely to discriminate, I would say, a class discrimination. That equal housing opportunity that buildings try to put out there, to me, is a scam. And then in terms of the public housing, aka the projects, I've been on a wait list with that list for over 10 years, and apparently other people too have been on this list, including some of my own family members, are now recently receiving these letters saying that they need to go ahead and fill this paper out and have it in by a deadline in order to continue to be on this wait list.
You nailed it perfectly, because the reality is that the housing was built as a guarantee for poor people in this country to have housing, and it is actually systematically being unhinged from anything to do with poor people housing. Thank you so much. We will talk soon. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
So for listeners, last segment, we actually heard the scholarship of our fellow poverty scholar and researcher at Western Regional Advocacy Project, aka RAP Home. And we have, again, blessed to have Paul Bowden on the line. Today we're kind of focusing on Section 8 and the way in which that piece of paper is being dismantled. Can you give listeners some quick history on that?
Section 8 was actually created when Nixon tried to kill the whole affordable housing funding at HUD. And then they came up with Section 8, which is our real introduction of bringing market forces to bear on the development of affordable housing, because originally they were project-based, meaning the subsidies were attached to the units, and the units were to be kept affordable for 25 or 40 years. The idea is that developers are now making money and have an investment, and that will save housing. Then Clinton and them in 98, when they did Contract on America, really had switched over, and this was also part of the Hope 6 legacy, is we don't want to do project, long-term, project-based financing for affordable housing for communities. Instead, it'll be cheaper and easier to just give people vouchers in 4 months, or sometimes you can get an extension up to 6 months, to find private landlords that will deal with HUD. And then they wonder why the stuff is just falling apart. It's falling down. You take housing for poor people in America and you commodify it and you push it with low-income housing tax credits, Section 8 programs being run this way, and now mortgaging off public housing. You know, housing doesn't have to be a commodity. In 1937, it was deemed to be the responsibility of the federal government to ensure that people have a clean, safe, decent place to live, and that should be what's driving it. And it's not. What's driving it is, how can we do this under a pretense of caring about poor people, but ensure that the private market is going to make some money off it? Because if it isn't making a profit for the corporate America, it's not a worthwhile activity of the federal government.
And just so listeners understand, Section 8 is a piece of paper. And as someone who was on that certificate with my mama, we could not get a private landlord to accept it. And so within 90 days, and even with an extension of 90 more, we lost that Section 8 certificate.
They knew this when they created this stuff. If a landlord can get tenants on the open market, they're allowed to discriminate if your income is less than 3 times of what the rent is.
Exactly.
These guys aren't going to all of a sudden say, oh, you know, ensuring a right to housing for poor people in America is my individual responsibility as a corporate landlord.
Right.
That's not going to happen. Which is why in 1937, the federal government stepped in and said, we'll cover that end of the deal. And unfortunately, we didn't decommodify housing. In fact, we've eliminated what little bit of housing we were doing in order to commodify it and in order to ensure that somebody's making money on the deal. And then we wonder why it doesn't work for poor people.
Where can people get more of your powerful research?
On our website, WRAPHOME, raphome.org.
Thank you. Talk to you
soon. Thank you. Bye.
To fight this devastation of our public housing, of our public housing right, to change the conversation, us poor peoples, African peoples, indigenous peoples who have lived in these buildings for generations are putting out a call to conscious lawyers to help us launch a class action suit to establish our equity. Again, our goal is to change the conversation from the death of displacement to our just rights to equity and housing stability. If you are interested, please call us at 510-435-7500. Again, if you are available or interested, 510-435-7500.
Finally, tonight, Thursday, 6:30 at Laney College, shout out to a powerful event, Resisting the Prison Industrial Complex, featuring a multiracial conversation on the plantation systems of prisons. And this Sunday, November 17, at the Good Samaritan Center at 4 p.m., Justice for Genocide on 1294 Potrero Avenue near 24th Street in San Francisco. For more information, call 415-574-6111. And the 5th Annual Mercado de Cambio Posto, coming up Saturday, December 7, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Port Magazine, 2940 16th Street, number 301. Support indigenous artists in poverty with the holiday dollars.
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication lead to complication.
Asheo Omateo. In prayer right now for our brothers and sisters in the Philippines, for all island nations, and for the family of Rashida McBride, killed by racism in America KKK. Thanks to Anthony Fest for his production assistance, and Andres Soto for all the work you do. And thanks everyone for listening. Asheo.